Welcome to Caffeine, Crime and Canines, a podcast brought to you by two girls who love their dogs, love coffee, but most importantly, love true crime.
Hello.
Lockie, hello.
How are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Good, I feel like I actually haven't spoken to you in a while. Like, maybe it's just because we didn't do last week, but it just feels like a long time.
It feels like forever because we're so used to chatting like every week and we did not talk last week at all. So how are you feeling?
I'm sick again. This is something new. I went out for dinner last night and I got home and I could just feel like something coming on. So I'm like blocked again and I've got a sore throat. But last week I don't know what the hell was happening, but I was like, I couldn't move. I was like bedridden. Anytime I'd move, I'd vomit.
Look, and like, that I was horrible.
I know, it was horrible. And like, I was bedridden all day. Even like, if I'd roll over in bed, I'd vomit. Like, what? It was just horrendous. Yeah, it was horrendous. And then I started to feel better. Then I got conjunctivitis at the start of this week because Elsie brought it home from daycare. Oh. So I've been waking up every morning with like my eyes stuck together. And then that has started to settle down. I still have a little bit of conjunctivitis, but it's nowhere near as bad. And then now I have another cold. And just to put a little icing on top of the cake, Monkey's grandmother passed away last night and he's just gone down to Warrnambool this afternoon. So I'm by myself with Elsie till probably Tuesday night and I'm sick. So it's just like the world just keeps bloody kicking me while I'm down.
But anyway, that's such horrible news.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, we'll dedicate this episode to Edna, but like, she has been in like assisted care for like 2 and a bit years now and hated it, like absolutely hated it. She did not want to go and she's hated it. The second she was put in that home, she's hated it and has just been waiting for this moment, I think. So in a sense where everyone's quite happy that she's finally gone and she can be at peace because she was not happy with her life the last few years. And we, to be honest, like we see her every time we go to Warrnambool and every time we go, we say our goodbyes because she was, you know, she's been on this way down for a while. So we're not surprised, but it's still sad.
Yeah, it is, you know, really sad.
What a way to go out, I suppose. And just it's really sad. But anyway, he's down there now and then I'm on my lonesome.
Gosh.
But anyway, what about you? What have you been up to?
A few months. Oh, Lockie, the last few days, I don't know if you saw or you would have heard that Danny, who we both used to work with and he's literally one of my best friends, came down, didn't tell me she was coming. So I'm sitting in reception just doing my work and there were a few people in there, like John was at the front, Gav, and then Jess. So we were just like sort of chatting. And Danny walks in. They freaking surprised me. And I screamed. When I say I screamed, one of the engineers told us yesterday that he dialed 000. He thought I was having a heart attack.
Oh my God.
That's so shocked I was. Oh,
and was
my
she just
goodness.
Coming for a visit? Like, that was, she just wanted to come say
hello. We had our Christmas party last night.
Yep.
So she came down for that. So we had an absolute ball. It's been like a really fun few days.
Oh, that's good.
But yeah, she's already off. She flew out this afternoon. She'll be flying out. Yep. I just dropped her off. So, Danny, welcome back to New Zealand. I'm sure she'll be listening tomorrow morning.
Oh, that's so good.
I know, but honestly, it was just so fun. Yeah.
That's good.
And crazy. What else have I been doing? I feel like I've been watching a bit of Bosch. I don't know if, I know it's like an old man show, but he is a detective, so there might be someone, one of our listeners might watch. I freaking love it. I don't know what it is. And everyone I tell, they're like, I think my dad watches that. I'm like, well, it's a pretty good show. So I love it. I didn't realize that. another season. Sorry. Anyway, I saw it the other day and I was like, oh my goodness. Yeah. So that's what I've been doing.
Shows. I don't think you would have watched this because I feel like it wouldn't come up on your recommended. It's a crime show, but it's like very Australian. That Last Stop Larimar.
No, what is that?
I've never heard of it. I knew it wouldn't have been on your Netflix radar. It is, you need to go and watch it this afternoon. Like, I'm not lying. Like, you should go and watch it this afternoon. So it's an Australian documentary. It's actually was like, I think it's produced by Netflix, but it's based on a small Australian town in the Northern Territory called Larimar. And in the early 2000s, the population of Larimar was 11 people. That's it. And this guy, Paddy, his name was, he goes missing in this town, and he goes missing under pretty suspicious circumstances. Sorry. You know, like, it's not like he left, like, all his belongings were there. His dog was gone. Like, it was really, really weird. And because the town was only 11 people, like, the police were just like, someone in this town has to know what's happened. And the documentary is just about the case and the town. And yeah, it's just, it's wild. You have to watch it. It's only 2 episodes.
It sounds so interesting.
Yeah, I think it's right up your alley. And I'd love to know what you think because I have my thoughts, but it's so good.
Well, let me watch it and then we should cover it.
Definitely. Definitely. We definitely will. Definitely watch it. And I really want to know what you think because it's just, it's right up your alley.
All right. I'm going to watch it. I'll watch it this week so we can discuss it next week.
Yes. Love that. That was really good.
You know what I do want to quickly talk to you about, which I don't know if you're even aware of, but it's honestly, I had this on my list to talk to you about last weekend, but I'm still going to bring it up this weekend because my blood is absolutely boiling. You know that it would have been a week and a bit ago, they re-released resale Taylor Swift tickets.
Oh, yes.
I don't know if I've told you about this. Lockie,
No.
I waited on the ticket tech site for, when I say hours, I mean freaking hours and hours. I finally got through and the tickets, right, kept popping up. But you got to refresh, you got to keep refreshing, and then you got to go in a line because it'll kick you out after 10 minutes. And there's all these tickets there, right? And you try to click on them, and then you click on them again to put them in your cart. And it's like, I'm sorry, another customer has already gotten these. It has been driving me insane. And not this week, because now at the moment, you don't have to wait as long to get into the site, and there's just nothing available. Last week, Lockie, I was setting my alarm, I'm not even kidding, throughout the night because I was waiting in this line. I was like, if I miss it, then I'm not going to even get a chance. So my alarm was going off every hour. And then when I could see I was getting close, I went every half an hour and I still couldn't get tickets. And I'm effing fuming because who else is doing this? And they're the ones that are able to get the tickets. I don't get it.
I've got something that I've found out on TikTok and it is going to, I think it's going to kill your soul.
What is it? Tell me.
I've seen multiple TikTok users, Australian.
Yeah.
When they did the resale and they were on the website and they were saying things like, I've already got tickets, but I want to get better seats. Or people that already had tickets were buying more tickets and then they're just going to take the better seats and then deal with the other set later on.
But if they're going to resell those seats, I don't even care. I do not give a shit what I get at this point. But I'm just fuming because if you've got tickets, come on. Yeah, exactly. I am infuriated and I've already used this joke on all the admin girls, but I thought it was pretty funny because by the end of last weekend, Lockie, my finger, it felt like I'd strained it. Because I was refreshing like a nut job. When I said I was, and I had so many, I had my mobile, I had 2 laptops, and I strained my finger from trying to refresh for Taylor Swift tickets. And I still couldn't get them. Anyone knows what the trick is, is there something? Because I cleared that, was it that catchy? Or something? Cleared that. I got rid of all my tabs. Why can I? And sorry, this is last thing on it. So to the point, Lockie, where I'm in the bit where it says there are no tickets and I'll refresh and tickets will pop up. So which means I would be one of the first people to see it because I was in there a second ago and then I've refreshed and then they've popped up, right? and I still couldn't get them. And I just want to know, what am I doing wrong? If anyone knows, DM us, because I cannot figure this out. I have no idea what I'm doing wrong.
You know how when Taylor Swift got released initially, we didn't get any, and then to kind of make myself feel better, I bought tickets to Paramore?
Oh, yes. Yeah, yeah. I remember saying that.
That was this week, but I didn't go because... So it was on Tuesday night and I worked all day. I actually had a really busy week at work this week and worked all day. And then Cass, my friend Cass, who I was going to go with, she was sick, thought she had COVID. And she's like, I'm not going to go. So I was going to go on my own. Like, I really didn't mind. And then when I got home that night, I could feel the conjunctivitis starting. I was like, I can't go. Because conjunctivitis is so contagious. Like, you don't even have to touch someone and they'll get it from you. And I thought, I can't go. Like, I can't go and sit next to people and give them this eye disease. So I didn't go. That... And I literally waste, like, I didn't sell the tickets or anything, like, money down the drain.
Far, that's so sucky, Lockie.
I know.
I was going to say, you know, with conjunctivitis, like, as a kid, I thought it's, like, from when someone farts on your pillow. But I was telling someone recently, have you heard that?
That's pink eye.
That's is it? Oh, maybe I'm confused. Oh, you're pink right. Eye. It's pink. But isn't pink eye conjunctivitis? Are they the same?
No, I think conjunctivitis is like a bacterial virus.
Oh.
And then pink eye is like from fecal matter that gets in your
eye. Well, because I'm pretty sure Sophie, who listens actually, so she'll probably be laughing. Because I was telling her, she's like, I've never heard of that in my life. And I Googled it, and then it's like, this is it's like a Mythbusters. Like, it's not actually true. Like, if you fart on someone's pillow, they won't get it. So it must just be a kid thing, yeah.
How funny.
But yes. So should we get started, Lockie?
Yes, let's do it.
Into this week's case.
Family of a murdered teen hopes a somber anniversary will spark new clues into that mystery. Let's get to News Center 5's John Adwater. He's live in Somerville tonight, John.
And Ed, this square has been dedicated to the victim. You see her name up on the signpost there. Her family and friends left that wreath there today. And tonight they left these candles here. Even 20 years later, they still have hope of finding her killer.
Their determination has not faltered over two agonizing decades.
This city is still coming together in memory of Deanna 20 years later.
Tonight they walk with candles to remember a 17-year-old whose killer still has not been found.
It's one more year. It's one more year. It's one more year.
The mystery has deepened over the years, and for Deanna Kremen's mother, hope has been hard to hold on to.
The life that should have been fulfilled and was so brutally robbed, and to have, no, like... I don't know of any progress, of any actions.
During a prayer service tonight, family pleaded for clues.
She deserves so much more. Deanna deserves justice.
Deanna was found strangled behind a Somerville housing complex on March 30th, 1995. The boyfriend she was with the night before had been considered a person of interest early on, but charges were never filed. The district attorney who came to the service says she still has hope clues will point to the right suspect.
We continue to re-examine what we have to look at new forensic developments.
I just want the person that murdered my daughter to know that may every cell of skin on your body crawl, every hair on the back of your neck stand up, because we are very close behind you.
Obviously, it has been such a frustrating two decades for this family, but really what inspires them most is the number of people who come out every year to remember Deanna. We're live in Somerville tonight. John Atwater, WCVB News Center 5.
So this week, we will be discussing the case of Deanna Kremen. So Deanna J. Kremen was born on March 26, 1978. And you know, Lockie, I just want to ask you, do you reckon I could not find what J stood for? Just be a middle name? Like, I was a little confused.
I don't know. I reckon it stands for something.
Yeah, same. I was just curious. I was like, oh my God, I ask Lockie that. But anyway. So her parents' names were Catherine, and she went by Kathy, and Albert, who went by Bert. Deanna had an older sister named Christine. At a young age, Deanna's parents separated, and Catherine has openly discussed the abuse she went through during the relationship in multiple interviews. Catherine later married Michael Creeman in 1981, and they relocated to California with the family, moving around, eventually before returning back to Somerville when Deanna was 9. They settled in the Winter Hill neighborhood, which at the time was considered a lower middle class area. Catherine and Michael had 2 sons, Albert, who was 4 years younger than Deanna, and Mark, who was 11 years younger. Deanna adored her brothers and took on the role of a protective big sister. Deanna looked up to her older sister, Christine, and Christine has described Deanna as her little shadow. Deanna would follow Christine everywhere, and Catherine believes Deanna even started walking at just 9 months so she could keep up with her sister.
Wow.
The sisters were close with only a 17-month age difference. They shared a bedroom decorated in a strawberry shortcake. And navigating through the usual sisterly issues like borrowing each other's clothes without permission. But they always stuck together when it counted. And I've seen stories, and it seems like they had been through a lot of like family stuff together. And I feel like automatically that will just like deepen your connection, you know? Now, despite a challenging home life, Deanna was a happy, upbeat, and outgoing 17-year-old with a magnetic personality. I thought that was pretty cool. So standing at only 5'2" and described by her sister as like a size 0, she defied expectations by being able to eat 6 slices of pizza in one sitting. So Deanna's favorite color was purple. I think, you know, I'm just putting these little bits and pieces in because I feel like a lot of, when I started researching this case, like, I don't know if you found this, but I feel like this, my research was more about Deanna herself, not about the crime. And I found that really interesting. And I actually loved.
Yeah, that doesn't happen often.
Yeah, not at all. Usually it's all about the crime. So yeah, that's why I just like putting in these little fun facts. So Deanna was your typical teenager. She would skip school, sneak cigarettes, enjoyed drinking beer in the park, and even got detentions. But she was known for her warm personality. Deanna devoted time to caring for her grandmother who suffered from Alzheimer's. She absolutely loved children and participated in the childhood development program at school. She also volunteered to be featured in 2 children's videos at the Somerton Cable Access Television. It must be like some sort, like they're doing some television programs for kids. So I thought that was pretty cool as well. And she babysat in her spare time and was even known to be the neighborhood's favorite babysitter.
Yeah, she just sounds like such a classic teenager.
Yes, exactly. So while she was unsure about exactly what she wanted to do after high school, many believe that Deanna's future would involve working with children and possibly as a preschool teacher or a social worker. Deanna worked at the Star Market and had just finished training to be a clerk, and she absolutely loved her job. It was through friends from work that she met her boyfriend of 2 years, Tommy LeBlanc. Tommy was the polar opposite of Deanna, and he was characterized by his quiet and withdrawn demeanor. On March 29th, 1995, just a few days after celebrating her 17th birthday, Deanna finished an in-class assignment listing the 5 most important life goals. She wrote that she wanted to graduate from high school. She wanted to find a successful job that she enjoyed. She wanted to buy a dark green convertible Mustang. And she wanted to have a happy family. She said her 5th goal was to live a long and healthy life. And this was her most important goal. Later that afternoon, while on her way to Tommy's house to do some homework, Deanna happened to bump into her mum. A few hours after, she called home asking if she could extend her curfew to watch her favourite TV show. And Lockie, this just shows the times, because in one interview, Catherine says that she remembers it was Melrose Place.
Mm-hmm.
And you know how much I love Melrose Place. Like, the 90s Melrose Place, I usually rewatch every year. I freaking love it. And I just felt like she would have been watching it for the first time. You know what I mean? So I can understand why she didn't want to miss it, because it's just so juicy. Anyway, so Deanna was expected to be home by 10 p.m. and she had not returned home by midnight. Concerned, Catherine tried calling her pager, which she had actually just bought her for her birthday, but she received no response. Now, she just assumed that Deanna had fallen asleep at Tommy's. So Catherine thought she would just wait until the next morning. And I'm guessing this just happened regularly. And as a teen, you know that this totally has happened to me before, like that I've fallen asleep and just woken up like in the middle of the night and being like, my parents are going to freaking kill me.
Yeah.
So when Deanna had still not returned the next morning, Catherine tried reaching Tommy, who claimed that Deanna had returned home that night. Confused and pressed for time for work, Michael, remember that's Deanna's stepfather, said that he'd help to locate her so Catherine could head to work. However, Lockie, as Michael began his search, police officers arrived at the family's doorstep. Two girls on their way to school, taking a shortcut behind a senior housing campus, discovered Deanna's lifeless body lying in an open space near a tree and a chain link fence. And tragically, these girls recognized Deanna because she was their babysitter.
I know, this breaks my heart.
Doesn't it? Because they were young girls as well. I'm pretty sure they were like primary school age. Michael called Catherine at work asking her to come home, but he was unable to tell her over the phone what had actually happened. When she pressed him for information, he said, quote, "You know what happened." I think she just had a feeling, you know, that it was going to be devastating news.
Yeah.
So Deanna was discovered less than a block away from her home. She was lying on her back and was mostly undressed. She had only a red jacket on at the top, which was open, and her underwear was pulled down and partially off. But can I tell you, I've also read that she was wearing jeans as well, and one leg was in the jeans. So I guess it just depends on which articles you sort of find.
Yeah.
The medical examiner later determined that she had been sexually assaulted and strangled. Catherine has shared that there is evidence that Deanna fought for her life, and Catherine has heard that she had broken bones, but there's not that much information about the crime scene or evidence out there. Mm. Now, an immediate investigation began, and naturally it started with interviewing Tommy, as he was her boyfriend and the last known person to have seen her alive. Tommy informed police that on the night of the murder, he only walked Deanna halfway home because he needed to quickly get back home as he was expecting a food delivery. Deanna was found just feet away from the spot Tommy had left her. This departure from their usual routine raised eyebrows, as Tommy would usually walk Deanna the entire way home, waiting until she entered the house before leaving. He would then call her once he returned to his home.
Yeah, it's like, what are the chances of this happening on that one time he doesn't do the normal thing?
Yes, exactly. And why didn't he call when he got back to his house?
Yeah.
Like, that's two sort of deviations from their regular routine.
And my biggest question was, like,
and I may have missed it, but like, did he live with his parents? Did he live alone? Like, when they say his house, like, who did he live with?
I'm pretty sure he lived with his, I don't know if it was like if his parents were together, but I know he lived with his mother.
Okay.
So I'm guessing he was living with his mother at the time. And I'll tell you why I know that when we get in, because I've got it on my notes. But yeah, I'm quite sure he lived with his mother at that time as well.
Yep.
So it's reported Tommy did have a receipt for the takeout that night and even an alibi as he hung out with one of his neighbors after he walked Deanna halfway home. However, Tommy wasn't the sole focus of the investigation. A sketch of an unidentified man was released, naming him as a person of interest. Despite being seen around the area, the man has never been identified. Police released a composite sketch describing him as between 5'9 and 5'11 and weighing between 160 and 170.
Wait, was it one witness that was able to put this sketch together?
Yes.
And was it a witness that... are you going to answer my question here? Is this the witness that was lying?
Wow, yes. Sorry. Can I tell you something? There's not much on this. And again, depending on which articles you read, but I know it's mentioned, I'm pretty sure in True Crime Garage's episode, that somebody had lied about seeing someone, right? And had put this sketch together. And I think that they had said that they had done this in hopes of people coming forward for leads, if that makes sense. Yeah. Like, it sounds ridiculous. It doesn't actually make any sense. But this is what this person says they did.
Yeah.
So they lied about seeing a man. So maybe like the man that was in the area was scared. I have no idea. It makes no freaking sense, right? No.
It's like, but you know what? Get out of it, you know?
Yes. Just get 100%.
Out of it. Like, no one needs your help, you know? Just go.
But you know what's crazy? This is the thing, Lockie. This sketch to this day still comes up if you Google her name or in podcasts or little docos and stuff like that. This sketch is still attached to her case. So there's like two things I'm thinking. Like, obviously this guy did something dodgy or did police. I actually have no idea why it's still attached, because you'd think if it had nothing to do with the case, it would have been sort of like completely not even spoken about or spoken about as like a false lead. It's not done though. But you know what is weird? This sketch actually looks like an older Tommy. Have you seen the sketch?
No, I'm going to look it up right now, though.
Yeah, it looks like an older version of Tommy, which is a little bit weird, right? I don't know if you've got a photo of Tommy, but yeah, I'll definitely pop up a side-by-side and see what everyone else thinks also. But another person who quickly became a suspect was a local firefighter. He was from one of the city's most influential families. Deanna would walk past the fire station on her way home from school, and this man, who was more than twice her age, I think he was like mid-30s to even 40, right? He reportedly took a liking to her.
Yeah, this is gross.
Isn't it? But you know what's crazy? I'm pretty sure this man went to school with her mum. I've seen it reported.
Gross.
I know. So he offered to teach Deanna how to drive, and she accepted, like, his proposal. Now, during one of these outings, Deanna's younger brother, who was in the car with them, told Catherine that he'd actually seen them kissing.
Yeah.
Now, despite remaining a top suspect, no evidence has ever linked this fireman to the crime.
Not surprised by that, though, if he's in an influential family.
Exactly. Exactly right. But, I mean, it just, I guess it depends on how much pull they have. And if they do have DNA evidence from the scene, I think that would be a little bit harder to cover up, you know, like if they ran his, I don't know, DNA. And you'd think being a firefighter, like, they'd have his DNA. Would they have the DNA on fire? I'm guessing for a policeman they would. But, yeah, I'd think they would. Anyway, another man of interest was a guy known as Vinny No Shoes, whose real name was Antonio. Now, he was living in the area, and he was later incarcerated for sexual assault, and some reports even say murder. Now, I have to put this story in because, honestly, we have to talk about this. So, Vinny No Shoes was known to offer rides to young girls. He'd then convince them to come to his house, remove their shoes, and jump up and down. What Lockie, what the fudge?
Foot fetishes is a really popular, aren't they?
I feel like
every second freak we talk about has some type of foot fetish.
It's so weird. It is so freaking weird. And not only would he make them jump up and down, right? He'd make them jump up and down on a damp towel.
Oh.
Like, what is that? What is that? I don't even know.
Oh my god!
I always like. I feel like, and I always send it to Danny and the Jess and the girls. Like, there's like a thing on Insta, and it's like some girl. And the guy's like, "How much money do you have in your bank account?" And she's like, "I can't even remember, hundred and something thousand, or 300 and something thousand." And it's like, "What do you do?" She's like, "Fun with feet." You know that website? Do you know how tempted I've been to join up? Just
I know. I'd happily sell my feet.
Yeah.
Yeah, but it's so like funny. You can go down rabbit holes of like people that like dirty feet or feet with nail polish.
Oh,
like,
oh, God. Like
there's all these different categories of like what type of feet you're gonna put up.
I can't even. Actually, you know what's so funny? So my mum's friend, me and my mum were in hysterics, right? She put up shoes to sell on like Gumtree or Marketplace, and all these guys were messaging her. Asking her, one guy in particular, Lockie, I was crying. He asked her, he's like, I'll pay you. Can you step on a bug, like with your bare foot?
Why is it so popular? Hey, didn't like when you sold something on like eBay or something, somebody message you for your socks?
I still get it, and I don't know if it's the same guy. It's not even feet related stuff. But I get it all the time, right? And I think I told you, like, I found the location and it's sort of like, it's definitely in Melbourne. I'm like, how is this guy freaking finding me? And he asks me, like, can I buy your socks? He always wants to buy my socks. And he emails me on, not emails, but he messages on eBay. I'm so creeped out.
Oh my God, you should do it.
That's what my mum said. She's like, freaking just tell him, like, 50 bucks. Yeah.
Yeah.
So funny. But anyway, that's how he got his name, Vinny No Shoes, right? Now, despite explaining to police how he would have done it, right, how he would have committed the crime, how he would have killed Deanna, he maintained his innocence. Did a bit of an OJ there, which is so sus.
Yeah.
There's also online speculation that he may have worked at Star Market.
Yep.
So maybe like there's a bit of a connection there. But in saying that, because he has been incarcerated, you'd think if there's DNA evidence from the rape, or because she did fight for her life, like whether she's got, do you know what I mean, like DNA under her fingertips and stuff like that, they could easily link this guy if he was, you know what I mean, the killer.
Yeah.
Now, during the investigation, Tommy became uncooperative. He lawyered up and declined a polygraph test, which I get. I get the polygraph thing.
Yeah.
He did plead the Fifth Amendment when summoned to testify during a grand jury trial. And he says it's because he would have gotten in trouble regarding, I don't know if it was buying or selling drugs. It was like some sort of drug issue. I don't know whether maybe he went to buy drugs that night or something along those lines. I don't know. It just sounds dodgy to me, you know?
Yeah, it does.
So ultimately the grand jury decided not to indict him or anyone else for Deanna's murder. So 2 months after Deanna's murder, Tommy's mother Susan got a restraining order against him.
This is so weird.
Yes. Right, so she got a restraining order against him, but has stated it's not relating to Deanna's case. And this is what I was going to say. So I'm assuming that's why I think that he lives with his mum.
But, like, I think
I think it would take a lot for a parent to get a restraining order. I don't think yes. it was like, say it was the first time they were ever violent, you wouldn't get a restraining order as your first thing. I think he was obviously shown violent behavior towards his mum.
Yes, 100%. Well, Susan said that she believed filing the order would help Tommy get the help he needed.
Yes, right? So he's clearly had some problems.
100%. And the reason she did file it is because Tommy began having violent mood swings and was verbally abusive towards Susan after Deanna's murder. But like you said, that's a pretty big step for a mum to take.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know what to do with that information. I do think it is a little bit dodgy.
Yeah, definitely.
So from reading, yeah, not at all. From reading between the lines, I think Tommy remains the top suspect in this case, especially because in the aftermath of Deanna's murder, police observed scratches on his arms and cheek, right? So this is after, yeah. obviously, she was murdered. Catherine later discovered letters written by Tommy to Deanna suggesting that Tommy had an unhealthy obsession with her and wanted to control and possess Deanna. So that's no good.
Interesting.
Yeah. I do want to, at the end, actually, because I, actually, no, let's talk about it now. If it was him, though, do you think that he staged the scene? Like, what could have happened, Lockie? It's such a weird scene.
I think if he did it, I don't think he would have sexually assaulted her and then left her. I reckon he staged it. I reckon if he did it, he staged the sexual assault.
Yeah.
Because, like, the whole autopsy, like, the medical examiner saying she was sexually assaulted, I don't think there was, like, much evidence to suggest that she was sexually assaulted. It was just insinuated because of the way she was found.
And you know what? I know it sounds bad, but she may have had sex with him, like...
Yeah, that night.
Before. Yeah, exactly, before. And yeah. not only that, but if he... That might be a reason why they can't prosecute him, because he was like, yeah, she was my girlfriend. Yeah, we did have sex, like... Yeah. You know what I mean? So I think that is a massive, like, clue. If they found DNA on her that wasn't Tommy's, then, yes, I am definitely open to another suspect. But the fact that there's not real much about it makes me think that – and you know what? The fact that they haven't been able to rule him out makes me understand why he's the number one suspect, if that makes sense.
Yeah, and, like, maybe she tried to break up with him or something. Like,
or he found out about the fireman.
Yeah, or found out the fireman or something, and it just made him mad. He clearly has a violent past if his mum's got a restraining order on him.
But do you think that was a crime scene, or do you think he actually took her there? Because it's so, like, it would have been so hard to carry. Well, like, you carry her there,
I reckon he did it there.
Oh, you reckon he did it there?
Yeah.
He strangled her there. Interesting, yeah. Interesting. Yeah, I'm in two minds, honestly. Like, for me, he's probably the number one suspect, but, I don't know. I just think there's too many things pointing towards him. Like, you know, he didn't walk her all the way home. He didn't call. He didn't take part in a lot of her, you know, like her farewell, what do they call them? Like the...
Like a memorial.
Memorials and things like that they had for her, all that sort of stuff. So, I don't know, it just feels guilty to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, as I was saying, he never attended any memorial masses in dedication to Deanna. And Catherine says she hasn't seen or heard from him since 1997. While these things are highly suspicious, I'm guessing the absence of physical evidence is why charges have never been laid.
Yeah.
Deanna's murder had a devastating impact on her family. Catherine, unable to cope, turned to drinking and drugs, leading to the loss of her job, her home, and her marriage. She even temporarily lost custody of her sons due to a drink-driving incident. And she is, I don't know if you've heard any interviews with her, but she is really open about her life story. And I can't even remember now. I should have written down the podcast I listened to. I feel like it was Boston... Something, if you put in Deanna and then Boston, I don't know if it was Times or something along those lines, Dirty Boston or something like that, right? This podcast I listened to, she goes into detail about her life and just what a tough freaking life she had. And it's just absolutely heartbreaking. Like, she was hit by a car when she was really young. her father and both her husbands were abusive towards her. She has lost both her daughters. Christine later died in 2017 at just 40 years old.
Oh, that's sad.
I know. Catherine has really tried to get her life back on track and to keep Deanna's name in the public eye. She has petitions for, like, you know, for shows to take on her case and stuff like that. But I feel like there is, Lockie, I don't know if you struggled to find information on this case, but I really struggled to find a lot of info on here.
Yeah.
And it's a crazy case. Like, I just don't know why there's not much out there. Like, yeah. I couldn't tell you, you know? So Catherine has three grandchildren, and one of her granddaughter's middle names is Deanna.
Yeah, that's cute.
It is. Before Christine passed, she reflected on the impact Deanna's murder had on the family, stating, quote, "It was like I lost my entire family. My mother and father both fell apart. I had to be the mother to my two brothers at age 18. So it wasn't just Deanna dying. It was like my whole family pretty much died."
Yeah.
Michael, Deanna's stepfather, also tragically passed away in 2008 at the age of just 58. Catherine shared, quote, "He truly died a broken man over the loss of Deanna. It destroyed him." But, I don't know if you've seen many interviews with Catherine. I think, again, this is in that Dirty Boston episode I was telling you about. And, again, I don't know why, Lockie, this isn't featured in a lot of podcasts, but Catherine goes into a lot of detail about Michael and about how they were involved in, like, drug dealing and things like that, and how he was very abusive towards her. And I'm quite sure it's in this episode she said there was a time, like, it crossed her mind, could he have killed Deanna? Yes. And this is the only thing that makes me, I mean, again, think twice, because if he was in that sort of, like, social, like, do you know what I mean? If that was, like, his social circle, who knows if someone was trying to get back at him? Like, maybe she was targeted for a different reason, like being his stepdaughter. I don't know.
I feel like if he was involved, we would know a bit more about his circumstances, and we don't really.
Well, that's why I found it really interesting that it's not mentioned. Like, in all the articles, it just says, you know, he died a broken man, he loved her, you know, there's not much on it. But then when it's literally just this one thing I listen to, and it's actually her mum telling the story, and she says that she was sus at one stage, I was like, why is this not spoken about? It's that I find that odd, that it's just, you know. But, anyway, I just thought I'd throw it in there because, as I said, it's not really out there. So the investigation into Deanna's murder remains active, with evidence undergoing reanalysis using forensic technology that has advanced over the past 20 years. The family have heard similar promises from different district attorneys over the years, which always lead nowhere. The family conducts an annual remembrance ceremony for Deanna. Albert Rogers, Deanna's father, places a fresh wreath at the corner of Temple and Jakes Street, named Deanna Creman Square after her death. So there's, like, an actual, like, little area named after her. And obviously there are billboards up, and they do, like, other events. Like, one of the events they did, they actually did an event, like, a walk Deanna home, and they walked from Tommy's house to Deanna's house, like, things like
yes,
that.
Yes, so I did hear about that.
Yeah, they were really pushing it. Also, there is this song, right? I don't know if you've heard it. I don't even know who this guy is. And maybe I'll pop it actually on our Insta if I can get it. I don't know if Insta will have it, but I'll try track it down. But it's a song about who killed Deanna. Like, someone's actually written a song. There's, like, a YouTube on it.
Oh, yeah.
So, yes, there is a $70,000 reward for information leading to the arrest of Deanna's murderer. And there is hope that with the new advances in forensic technology that the perpetrator will finally be caught.
Mm.
And that is today's case.
I don't know if we'll ever know.
I think the only way we will know, literally, is if it's not Tommy and there is DNA evidence. That's the only, like, light of hope, because I feel like if it's Tommy's DNA, it's going to be very hard for them to prove, because obviously he was the last person with her.
Yeah.
So, yes.
I don't know. Okay, so if you have a case you want us to cover, you can send us a message on Instagram. Our Instagram handle is at Caffeine Crime and Canines, or you can head to our website and leave a request in the request box. If you wanted to support the podcast, you can leave us a 5-star review. You can head to our website to purchase some merchandise, or you can buy us a coffee at buymeacoffee.com/caffeinecrimeandcanines.
And until next week.
Until next week.
Bye.
Bye.